So for 30 years, South Africa's political trajectory was steered by just one single party. But now, for the first time since 1994, that monopoly is broken.
Yeah, it's a massive shift.
Right, there's this brand new government of national unity, or GNU, at the wheel. And today we're doing a deep dive into the medium-term development plan for 2024 to 2029 to see how they're trying to build a nation that works for all.
Exactly. And to really understand the stakes of this plan, you have to look at the Indlamithi scenarios for 2035. They map out these heavily researched futures, and two of them basically end in total societal collapse.
Oh, wow. Okay. So what exactly are we staring down here?
Well, the first really bleak path is called a data home. It's this slow, agonizing economic stagnation driven by paralyzed infrastructure, a lack of trust, and just, constant finger pointing.
Like the noisy bird just complaining all the time, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then the second scenario is even more severe. They call it vulture culture.
I was reading about that in the sources, and it describes vulture culture as a desperation nation ruled by this populist coalition focused purely on self-enrichment, like literally scavengers picking the bones of the state.
Right, which is horrifying. So the GNU's entire mission is to avoid those two disasters and hit the third scenario, which is called weaver work.
And I love that analogy because it's not just a cute bird metaphor. Weaver work means like a diverse group of birds weaving a complex, sturdy nest together to survive a storm.
Yeah, it's radical cooperation. The private sector brings capital, the public sector brings policy, and civil society holds them accountable. I mean, if one bird stops building, the whole nest falls out of the tree.
So how does a nation actually engineer that weaver work economy?
Well, their absolute apex priority is driving inclusive growth to hit a GDP target of over 3% by 2029.
Okay, wait, I really need to push back on that. A 3% growth target sounds great, but the business as usual baseline only projects 2%.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm looking at all the structural constraints in the sources, like failing freight rail lines and massive power cuts. You can't just mandate an extra percentage point of growth. What is the actual magic lever being pulled here?
So there's no magic lever, but there is this initiative called Operation Volendola. It's basically about ruthlessly cutting bureaucratic red tape.
Unblocking things, right.
Exactly. Instead of the government taking a decade to build a single power plant, they're changing laws so private companies can build their own solar and wind farms and sell power back to the grid.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And they're opening up freight rail networks and broadband to private operators. It shifts the economy from relying on state-monopolized, capital-intensive industries to high-growth, labor-intensive green and digital markets.
Okay, but pivoting to a green private public economy takes years to see real results. And the data shows over 55% of the population is living in poverty right now.
Yeah, it's a huge issue. People are hurting today.
Right, so how does a government survive that short-term pain while waiting for those long-term investments to mature?
They have to create immediate safety nets. Specifically, they're expanding the Social Relief of Distress grant and rolling out national health insurance. But, you've hit on the central tension of the whole plan.
Yeah, because I'm looking at this and thinking, is this a paradox? How do you expand massive social grant programs while simultaneously trying to fix a strained economy?
It sounds counterintuitive, I know.
If you can't increase the national deficit, where does the money actually come from?
Well, the plan includes a social policy and equity simulation that explains the how. It's all about the velocity of money.
Meaning what exactly?
So, if you shift the budget away from bloated state departments and put a basic income grant directly into the hands of the poorest citizens, they don't hoard it. They immediately spend it on local goods, groceries, transport, basic services.
So it stimulates local businesses from the ground up.
Exactly. Generating tax revenue without borrowing a single dime just by reprioritizing existing budgets.
That makes sense in theory, but executing that relies on a highly capable state. And the sources are very frank about the era of state capture, systemic, deep-rooted corruption.
Oh, absolutely.
The plan talks about professionalizing the public service, but fixing a hollowed-out government apparatus takes more than just writing it down in a document.
Which is why recovering from state capture is treated as a structural necessity in this plan, not just a moral one. You cannot execute complex budget reprioritization or secure national cyberspace without ruthless discipline.
The economic plan just collapses if the state apparatus isn't overhauled.
Right, 100%. Everything depends on a professionalized public sector.
So, what does this all mean for you listening? This medium-term development plan isn't just some dry policy document. It's a blueprint for survival.
It's a high-stakes gamble on radical cooperation, for sure.
Right, aiming to eventually hit the National Development Plan's incredibly ambitious 2030 goal of bringing unemployment all the way down to 6%.
It really is the ultimate real-world test of that Weaverwork scenario, building together instead of scavenging apart.
Which leaves you with this thought to mull over. If an entire nation, fractured by historical divides and staring down total collapse, can attempt to pivot to a unified Weaverwork model.
Yeah, it's a huge undertaking.
How might that same strategy of radical cooperation be applied to the polarizations in your own community or industry?